welcome to the Evolution Exchange Nordics podcast. At Evolution, we're committed to helping the people and Nordics tech organisations realise their potential. Our goal is to develop deep relationships with individuals, building trust to make doing business easier. I'm Georgia from Evolution Recruitment Solutions, and today I'm your host. Today I'm joined by Mats Johansson, who's Head of Engineering and Senior Director at IKEA Retail Web Inc. Group Digital. I have Ilya Mikhailov, who's Fractional CTO. I have Louis Rizzo, who's Senior Engineering Manager at Klarna as well, to discuss Engineering the Transition, Coder to Leader, Episode 3. Before we delve deeper into the topic, let's work our way around the room with some introductions. I'd like to know who you are, what you do, and what your biggest passion is currently. Mats, do you want to kick us off?
Yes, of course, I can start. So, hi everyone. My name is Mats Johansson. I'm originating from Älmhult, where IKEA was founded, and I've been working since 2006 in Helsingborg with IKEA.com. And I've been on and off with IKEA.com throughout the years in different leadership positions mainly. Started off as a software engineer, working with front-end. Right now, I am heading the engineering team, delivering a web platform that has 50 teams and 48 markets on it. So it's global scale and big scale in everything, more or less. So I really need to advocate for having good quality requirements and just making sure that we are compliant and fast and relevant for all the IKEA markets out there. And my passion is to lead through people. So I'm trying to find motivators and work with them in order to get the job done.
Amazing. Thank you so much for introducing yourself. Ilya, do you want to go next?
Sure. Hello, my name is Ilya Mikhailov. I'm ex-CTO at Swedish startup Ingrid. It's in the e-commerce space. I was there for the past 8 years, where I helped scale the company from 2 to 90 employees. I built the company's largest department with approximately 40 people and 5 different product teams. Today, I work as fractional CTO and tech and product advisor and also mentor and coach. So I help other companies to solve their technology, product and organizational challenges as a freelancer. And I help new managers or leaders level up their game with mentorship and coaching. So my personal motto is 10x in half the time. I believe that by making smart, tough and risky decisions, you can get to where you want to be much faster than you would like doing in traditional ways. And my passion is to see people level up and grow. That's what I care about.
I love that. And last but not least, Louis, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, Louis Rizzo. I work as a senior engineering manager at Klarna, but I come from the acquisition of PriceRunner. So I worked as a consultant right up until I joined PriceRunner 2017, where I took the role as engineering manager and then built that department from 2 engineers to 21 engineers. And then we got acquired by Klarna, and now I did a full integration into Klarna, and that's been quite a ride. What I'm passionate about is, much like Mats and Ilya, it's working with people is what it's my big passion, and especially getting the right people in the right place. So a lot of things are made. I mean, if we do it with passion, you get a passionate product. So you kind of want to have passionate engineers that really wants to build what they're building, not just doing a random task, basically.
Amazing. Thank you all so much.
Hi, everyone. This is Chris Bennett here, the Nordics Managing Director here at Evolution. We're committed to doing recruitment in a different way that adds value to both our clients and candidates by providing you with amazing speakers and leading edge discussions on what's going on in the tech scene at the moment. There are 3 reasons why you should contact me. If you would like to speak on a future podcast, if you are interested in hiring awesome tech, data, product or gaming freelancers for your business, or if you are looking for an exciting new organization to work with, please get in touch. Thank you so much for listening, and I really hope to hear from you soon. Please enjoy the rest of the podcast.
As usual, we'll move on to the topic in focus. So you all have a question or statement on engineering the transition, coder to leader. I'll work around the room asking each of you to pose your question and the reasons behind it, and each of you will have the opportunity to give your take on the situation. So let's start with Matt. I have your question here. So how do you work with promotions and talent acquisitions? Is there a culture to grow leaders in-house or only look externally? Tell me the thoughts behind this question.
Yes, of course, my experience is perhaps a bit different from others in the region, because I've been working with an enterprise company for my entire career. But we have had, in the past at least, the tradition to only look externally when you should have a senior manager or even a new engineering manager for a team or for a capability. But since the last transformation we did in digital, we have been now starting to look inwards instead and starting to build up our culture to build up people and to make sure that we have leadership education trainings, mentors, coaching, and whatnot, to really make sure that we are growing within, which is also very much part of the DNA of IKEA as well. So we should really make sure that we take care of our own talents and take care of our own people and make sure that they grow, because then they also grow with their culture and become good ambassadors, and then also, of course, grow new ambassadors with that. So just thinking about if what we are doing, if that's also something that is shared with the industry and so on, just to get some input and insights.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And I think that coming from Klarna, and especially coming from the Price Runner part of it, we were about 60 engineers, and we only had two managers when we joined Klarna. So it was me and my colleague. That's not scalable at all. So the first task we had was, okay, every team should have its own manager. Do we recruit or do we promote from within? And at that moment, we had very little attrition. People were, you know, having 5-6 years of experience within the domain, and a lot of people that showed and wanted to take this step pretty early on. So, you know, on one-to-ones, we discussed when the opportunity arrives, I would really like to take this step and so forth. So when we did join Klarna, we had a lot of people that were ready to take that step. And so pretty much every team that we have today in these two groups are from, you know, our own engineers that took the step to leadership. We haven't recruited one single engineering manager so far, not because we don't want to, but because we had so many that wanted to take the step. And as you say, taking care of your own, you know, just showing people that if you want this and you want a career, you will have it in our place. I think that's been a huge drive to a lot of our engineers. And the very few managers that have left us during these years, we have people really like in a line saying like, hey, whenever there's a chance, I would really love to take the opportunity.
So I have a question to Matt. So you said that you're kind of doing internal recruitment right now. What's the, like, do you have any education for those who you recruit, like how to become a manager, or just you say like, now on Friday you're a manager, and on Monday, like, just go manage people on the, what's the procedure like?
Yeah, so we normally take it in phases. So whenever we spot the talent, we can do that already, of course, when we are recruiting an engineer, for example. We can see what type of leadership profile they have. And then you bear that in mind. And then, you grow with that engineer. Perhaps the engineer grows to senior, grows to tech lead, for example. Perhaps can take care of the team when the engineering manager is on vacation, for example. Becoming then the next in line, in a sense. And then if you have an opening, we can set up an acting position quite easily then with that talent in mind. So that is something that we are doing. We don't bring in a consultant on leadership roles. So we always try to make sure that our own talents are getting the chance to try it out. And we also then offer leadership educations and onboarding as well for managers. Even if they're not becoming permanent, even if they're acting, they need to know how to be a manager. And especially at IKEA, we have our own tailored educations for that as well, in different steps as well. in seniority.
How long is the acting period? Like how long do you have to do be acting until you can be permanent?
So there is no there's no real rules for that. If there is an opening, you can apply for it, and then you can, of course, you can then show that you're capable. But that if you should take over that team that you're acting for, then the current manager then needs to of course either resign or move to another team, another opportunity. So, but mainly it's because of parental leaves, I would say, where we get these openings. And even if we are a very male-dominant industry, we still have a lot of fathers taking parental leave. So I think we have that as a really good thing happening, because then we have these chances quite often, actually, for making talents grow into leaders because of these 6 to 12 months openings, I would say. But sometimes we need to make one big team into two teams. And I was just working with that this year, actually. And I actually, after 1 month, I said, well, I started to talk with my manager that I wanted to make this acting manager permanent, because he was nailing it. He was acing it, more or less. He did everything that I was asking for and then some. And that was also very appreciated by the team. So sometimes you know fast and you want to get it rolling, I would say. So but it's up to the recruiting manager on the other end to just make sure just can have a good stomach feeling and then of course see the results. So so I don't say it, you don't have to be at a specific time, but the result counts, even if it's just 1 month. So true
yeah, especially if the gut feeling is right, then yeah.
Luis, I have a question for you, if it's okay. So you said that when you announced that you need more managers or leaders, you had a huge interest, inbound interest from the existing engineers. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of, I would say that's unusual.
Yeah, it is. It is. In a way. But I think that it is extremely unusual. But again, like the people that I've been working with have been working in the same group for between 4 to 7 years. So within that time, you're very comfortable in your domain, you're comfortable with your coworkers, and it's an easier step to take. It's at the same time a little bit scary, because becoming manager for your colleagues is also a kind of a sensitive topic. But aside from that, it's a more of a the next level, so to say. So when you've been working as in engineering for 10 years and then 4 years in the same domain, instead of switching jobs, giving the opportunity, like, okay, I can still change my career and I don't have to break everything for that. So that's why I think it's doable in my group. Now, in other Klarna groups, the retention is about between 12 to 18 months, which is much shorter. You don't really get the feeling of, yeah, I own my product, I understand my product, I want to take the next step. Then it's more, I think it's easier to just take the next step outside of the company. But when you give the engineers the comfort of understanding their platform, understanding what they're working with, the impact they have on the product, then I think it's the it grows easier. And that's just, you know, thinking. I mean, it's my opinion. So I'm not saying it is.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say, like, you said, like, it's hard to be, when first you were like IC, right? And you like individual contributor, and suddenly you're a manager. So you're managing your friends.
Yep.
And that can feel awkward, because I feel like either you're like on the engineering side or on the management side. And being a leader means being a management. So, and there is also like a healthy tension, right? You put demand on the, suddenly put demand on your friends that, like, hey, you have to deliver, I'm your manager now. And it can be really tough in my experience to do that.
Yeah,
that's why it's much easier to bring someone externally, right? So because you have no luggage, or so to say, right? So you just come in, it's expected from you. And mostly when people like in higher roles come up, they make even a statement by firing two people, right? So, like, just to show who is in charge. Like, now it's like, so it's like, I've seen that happen, like, to people that kind of like were promoted to engineering, but like couldn't really take the part of the management. And also interesting, if I can mention, I worked with you a long time ago, and I know that you're a great like people's person. And you were, back then you were an engineer, and you explicitly said that like, hey, I wanted to become like a manager. And you kind of got rejected and say like, no, it's not the time. Maybe because it for the same reasons, it was hard for you to, you know, like you were more like internally, right? So I'm thinking. But when you switch jobs, you actually like you leveled up as a like people's person and you became great at what you do. So I think in a way it was a missed opportunity from the management of the company we both worked at. What do you say about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great that you bring it up, actually. I think that the reason was also that I'm not really... So I have multiple teams that I manage, and so I'm manager of four managers. So I think it's the same for you, Mats. And I think that it's one thing that I tell them is every team is kind of unique. I mean, being a manager is not something you have you don't get a book and say like, this is how you become a great manager, because you will have to be. It's on an individual level. You have to learn like how are your peers? Are they very closed, open? Do they need support in which way and so forth? And in our former company, it was more of they wanted a very strict kind of this is the mold. You have to fit it. And if you don't, then we really don't think you will fit here. And I'm a very unorthodox kind of leader. I'm very transparent. I like to say how it is. I love direct feedback. And I think that's what was wanted at PriceRunner. And that was definitely not wanted in our former place. But yeah, I mean, I'm happy it didn't happen, because that's why I did go to PriceRunner. And I got to grow in this position. But as you said, like, yes, becoming manager of your friends, it is tricky. And that's the thing I got to do at PriceRunner as well. Much less, of course, because we were very few, but still kind of tricky, definitely.
I have a question to Luis as well. So going from engineering to leadership, were you afraid of that you would lose your kind of your programming skills or the technical depth, etc.? So how did you work with that? Kind of?
It's such a great question. So I think my first year, I almost kept the same level of delivery when it came to code. And I realized when I was working on an urgent task and one of my reports came and said like, hey, do you have 5 minutes? I'm like, yeah. Just give me 1 hour. I'll finish this up and come to you. And that hour became 2 hours. Lunch came. That person had to go to pick up in kindergarten. So I completely missed that. And I realized like, oh shit, like, here I am trying to deliver, you know, let's say 5% more to the company, but me enabling my engineers will give far more than that. So I kind of realized that I really can't keep up with development, and if I want to be a great leader, it's not by saying, yeah, this is the way you should handle server-side rendering. It's more of enabling the person that is really good at it and say, hey, what do you need to create this, you know, beautiful solution? And it was extremely tricky because development and code, you can measure. We as engineers love to be measured. We love to see, you know, the impact that we can create. Being a leader is much less of a measurement. And you get very little feedback. Like, is what I'm doing right or is what I'm doing wrong? And you don't really know. And you might have really low attrition and your reports might be really happy, but you will still feel like, am I doing this right? So, and today, I mean, I would say that my engineers are far better than I am when it comes to engineering now. I mean, far, far, far better. So I think it was needed for me to just accept that and let them grow and enable them. But that's also because I felt that I couldn't keep up. You know, I have to choose. Do I want to be a great leader? Or do you have a great coder? I don't want to suck at both. So I need to kind of pick one of them. and aim for one. So I'm not saying I'm a great leader, but I'm aiming at least to work towards that. I still do code a little bit, but not, I mean, we're talking very little.
I have a...
I think that... So I think that we already touched my question already, Georgie, right? What was the...
The toughest part of the transition. Yeah, we've touched on a couple of bits, Matt, what would you say your toughest part
of
your
transition? I was just thinking about kind of what type of decision or fork kind of in the road for you then. Like you went for either or kind of, but because I have just wanted to share a story for my one of my principal engineers. So it's who works cross teams now. And he was an engineering manager for 3 years. But he said that, like, I want to go back. I want to go back to code and to only focus on technology. I love people, but I've done my part now for the company. I've spent 3 years on that, so I want to go back. So is there a position for me? And we actually then came to the conclusion in engineering leadership, we needed a more uplifted engineering role, so we could actually offer that. So now we actually have two career paths. One for managers, engineering managers, and one for engineers. Now we can actually work on bigger things, on a movement. So I just wanted to say that at least at IKEA, we have that option that you can still be promoted and work cross teams or subdomains even, and still be within engineering. So it's not only the management road that you need to go to in order to have a good career, but we were very late to it, I would say. So I hope that the rest of the industry is doing it better. So
yeah, to that, I at PriceHunter we didn't have any kind of you could become engineer manager, that's it. That was basically the end of the line. When we did join Klarna, the very first thing that we encountered scared the shit out of us to begin with. Sorry, I'm cursing. It scared us at first, but now, you know, in hindsight, it's really good. And they have extremely clear paths for the individual contributors and for the engineering managers with levels. And the levels were kind of intimidating at first. It's like, it felt like, oh, they're measuring people. But the thing is that it set clear expectations on what you're expected to do at that level. And as you said, like for us at a level 5, which is a principal engineer, it's extremely clear what you need to achieve and what you need to do that. And I think it gives the right fuel because not everyone wants to lead people and not everyone wants to be the expert coder. So I think it's crucial for big organizations, at least, to have these different paths and ensure that everyone has a path to take. Otherwise, you're just going to lose people.
When you work in the startup, I mean, you both work at the big organizations, right? When you're a startup, you don't have that luxury. I mean,
exactly. You hit
the ceiling pretty fast, and either people move on or they want something else. Engineering manager is one path. But in my opinion, like people who join startup, they want to engineer stuff and not engineer people, right? And engineer technology. And it's kind of like transitioning to engineering manager or engineer or like leadership role is super hard because when you're like a developer or engineer, you're focused like 100% on technology, right? And then if you're tech lead, you're maybe like 80% of technology, 20% people. And then engineering manager, that's like a reverse. You have your focus is 80% people and 20% technology. Mm-hmm. And then you become the head of engineering. That it's only about people's problem. That you don't have any technology mostly. So, and it's like for me, when I started at Ingrid, it was just basically I had two people and I had to code everything myself, and I did. But then as we grew, you notice pretty fast that you become a bottleneck, right? When people are waiting for your pull request to production. So then it was super tough for me to say like, okay, like I need to let go of the coding even though, and I have to concentrate on the people. So it's different with management. You have, it's like, forget about the code. Most of that you're coding people and teams or stuff like that. So it's totally different. You have to kind of like get over the hump of yourself and say like, you know, this is what I do now. And people who I feel like many people have a hard time letting it go, especially engineers, to they want to code, they want to still do stuff, but it's when they should concentrate on the people instead. What is that? What was the toughest part of transition for you? You both are engineers, right? So
for me, it was coming into to a company where hundreds of engineers, developers, and when I was given the chance to lead a team, I could see that if I was just providing the right motivation and push, etc., still producing code and solutions, I could do so much more if I could just influence a bit more people with my time. So for me, that became my mission rather than I could let go of coding, and I still coded at home for myself, doing my own projects, etc., to keep it alive in a way. But I felt so happy at work, kind of leading these talents, these experts, these amazing people that I've had the pleasure to work with, that was inspiring me every day, just coming up with good solutions. So that was my kind of, so for me, it was quite easy, actually. I felt like I could do more with my leadership rather than with my output, kind of, so.
Yeah,
but how did you, okay, sorry, how did you, when you're doing something, you know, it's like coding, right? You have like tangible outputs. And when you're leading people, you don't have any tangible. It's like, as Luis was mentioning, you cannot see that in a way. It's you only have lag indicators, like what happens in after a while. How did you, like, what was your feeling during, like, for every day feeling, like, when you were leading people? How did you feel that you were making progress and having an impact?
So when I started back in the 2006, kind of here, by doing dual roles, kind of, we went straight out to production with our fixes. So we had a straight, you could see it, you could verify it on IKEA.com's website that actually fixed the problem. So, because we were patching all the time, we didn't have any IT frameworks or any change management during those times. It was like, okay, if we're happy with in your local environment, let's push it out. Let's make our customers happy. Just having that customer satisfaction, that customer focus, and also our business was in the same office, so we had these conversations all the time. So you got this, I got at least a confirmation daily that we were doing the right things. So, but I was mainly then in the, I was not part of the software projects. I was part of the run. So the team that got the software projects to us to make sure that they were actually working in production. So so that was my first time. So or where we got to the hump in a way, but no problems of getting the confirmations of understanding if we're doing the right things or not. So even through people and not through my own deliveries, I was still managing the deployment. So at least I had that satisfaction.
I think the for me, it's not that it wasn't the toughest part. It was a tough part to acknowledge and realize that I shouldn't be just producing code. I should, you know, coaching my teams instead. But the toughest part for me, in all honesty, was having to represent decisions that I myself didn't believe in. That's the toughest part. So whenever the stakeholders did push for something and I truly don't believe in that, and it's against basically everything that I would wish for, but I understand the decision and I need to push it and I need to deliver it in a way for my engineers that they also feel, you know, engaged and understanding to this thing. And I kind of know they won't, because I myself hated it, being behind decisions that I really don't believe in myself. That was the toughest part, to learn how to, okay, this is 100% business decision. It needs to be pushed. It needs to be done this way. How do I deliver this in the best possible way? And how do I kind of talk myself into thinking, but it is a good thing. that was the toughest part. It's still kind of tough, to be honest. I think that it's because I don't want to be dishonest either. Like, if I don't like something, I need to be honest about it. So I need to try to find the way, okay, what is it that I like about this? And just lean 100% on that. But that for me was the toughest part, and is the toughest part. Because as an engineer, you could just, you know, moan and scream about it. It's like, now, can't you understand that this is super bad for this and that? But as a leader, if it's a decision and it's taken, you can't be the one moaning and whining about it. But
do you think that people see through that, you, that when you're not, you don't believe in something? Or
100%, I think so. I have had a few situations where I really didn't believe in that, and my delivery wasn't as crystal clear as I was hoping it to be, and they were like, yeah, but we literally said, we can see that you didn't want to do this, man. And I'm like, and then I just took that instead and said, yeah, I mean, I don't have to love it, but it is a decision taken, so we need to go with it. And, you know, made most of the situation. And that's the thing, like one of the ways I like to lead is showing myself being bad at things too. Because if I'm not showing myself being bad at things, then people will have some kind of weird standard that, yeah, this person can cope with tons of stress. He can cope with super tough decisions. He's always happy about everything. And that's not really like, it's not real. And I want them to see like, yeah, we all think some things just kind of, you know, suck to do, but we have to do them sometimes. And just, you know, find the silver lining in things and see, okay, what is positive about this? What are we solving by doing this? Okay, so the solution itself is kind of good. We don't want this, but the solution is good. So let's aim for the solution instead. And, you know, trying to challenge myself to get to those conclusions. But again, like I would lie if I said that every decision I've made has been really good and all my deliveries have been perfect, because they sure haven't, and they will never be. But I mean, yeah. We are here to learn.
But people that work with you and in your direct reports, they will probably understand pretty quickly, like what you feel about it. Like, so they will tell you like, this is not you. Or
on some decisions, it's been exactly like that. And with the question like, do you really honestly think we should do this? And, you know, like, I mean, and that's where where you have to challenge yourself again. How do I deliver this properly without, because I don't want to either. Some of the decisions might also put myself into a position where, OK, if I have any kind of technology knowledge, how the hell could I agree with this? So by saying that I fully agree with the decision, I'm also kind of throwing myself into, you know, yeah, I don't know nothing. To my reports, but at the same time, it is a decision, and we need to think, okay, what can we take from it? So learning to balance that has been tough, and I know, like the feedback that I've got so far is that being then transparent makes it easier for them to receive this kind of news. Having said that, we've been working together for a long time, so they know me. That would be much harder for someone completely new, recently joined. This is their boss, and they say this and that. The rest of the group says, "Hey, this isn't you, man." I mean, how would that person kind of feel? So, yeah, I mean, again, it's a delicate situation, to be honest. It's when it comes to really tough decisions, it's that's when we really learn, and that's when we really grow. If we only had easy decisions, if we only had super easy development, then everyone would do this. It would be super easy, barely an inconvenience, but it isn't. And that's what I love about this part, and what I love about the transition is that, the way we challenge ourselves and the way we have to grow, because if we don't, then we're just bad leaders, and we don't want to be bad leaders. So it's still challenging. But I mean, I did, as I mentioned before, I did finish Vasaloppet. Nothing worth it easy. So, I mean. But how about you?
Yeah. I agree with you. Like, I mean, first you have to realize that you are, like, when you have to give up like coding, if you're a developer, right, you have to become a manager full time. And then the second part is like making hard decisions, tough decisions. And that's super hard. I mean, like, first time you when you have to fire someone, I remember that, like, my hands were shaking and I felt so uncomfortable. But you have to do that and go in and do that. It's never fun, but you learn, and that's how you grow. And you're doing it it's nothing personal. You have to realize that, right? It's business only. It's for the survival of the company, for the better. And I think it's like, in the same time, if someone is not functioning in a team, you have to get rid of the bad weeds in a way, right? So you have to nurture people who are good to help them grow, but you have to remove the weeds. But it's never fun and it's never tough, but you have to do it. And you have to do it, not someone else. I mean, I've worked with people who were managers, but they have, sometimes they didn't do what was like required from them either, right? So, and I think that's like not really correct. You have to stand by your decisions and make them like a tough decision.
So I have something to add as well. So I'm fighting against having brilliant jerks anywhere. Just making sure that we have good people working for us. They could be brilliant, but they can't be jerks, because that's toxic for the teams. But something that I was wondering, when you stepped into the leadership roles, if your people were, if the teammates then were respecting you, or how did they treat you? Because I have used a statement for myself that as long as they respect you, you can still be friends. But if they don't, I need to be a manager. Then I just need to make sure that the job is done. So what about you? Do you have any tips of how to manage that?
I think that's like, there's like a different kind of leadership styles, and everyone is required at different times. Right? Sometimes you have to really be assertive, but I really like this like servant leadership style, right? It's kind of like you're in the background and helping people grow. So that's kind of like my style, right? So there's like a good quote about that. I just have to, so it's like from the Lao Tzu, like a famous Chinese philosopher, or like he said, like a leader is best when people barely know he exists, right? When his work is done, his aim is fulfilled, they will say, we did it ourselves. So like he's in the background, so he's doing the right things, but it feels like he's like, or she's not doing anything. And that's the way it should be, I think, right? Kind of like invisible servant leadership, like helping other people level up. I think, but sometimes you have to step up and like be assertive and make uncomfortable decisions, and you will get respect out of that too, because you do take those hard decisions. Everyone knows that they're never easy, but you do them.
It comes to what kind of like where the glitch is. Like, is the respect based on technical level? Because from my perspective, my own, is that I have had some reports that expected me to be, you know, the top tier of knowledge when it comes to the technical solutions. And for me, some of my engineers, as I said, like, are far better than me. So, and I did notice that this person, it's not lacking respect, but I could sense that they were expecting more from me in that directive. So what I had to do basically was just to enable them to be like, no, yes. Just so you know, I am leaning on you on this decision. You are the expert on this one. And yes, throwing myself into them and just saying, you know, you are the expert. And I don't know if they gained respect or not. We have a really good relationship anyway. But I know that they were expecting more from me from a technical position. And I guess that when it comes to that, it's not about... Just being a manager, I think I would really try to solve whatever hurdle was there to not have that relationship. But that's just, again, as I said, I think it's so individual. and how we are with our reports and how we are with everyone. And for me, it's I like to be on a very personal level, and you know, knowing that I can trust them to deliver what their team needs to deliver, and they can trust me that I will do everything in my power to help them do that, kind of. And when it comes to you, especially when it comes to the knowledge level, that's where the respect kind of can start to, you know, go down in levels.
Crumble. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But this is interesting what you say, like, it's so typical of engineers, right? They expect you to know, like, maybe deep technical stuff when you're not updated. And mm-hmm. you win the respect of engineers by showing the technical knowledge in the way. But it's also, like, I'm not afraid to say, like, hey, I don't know anything about that. You make the decision. Like, it's on you. Because it's always easy to make someone else a decision. But as you say, Luis, you say, like, like, I'm leaning on you for this one. It's it's your call now. What do you say? But it's they will, like, realize that it's not that easy, right? It's easy to think something, but it's hard to make the decision. So that's why, in a way, you win respect by doing that too, right?
Yeah, true.
So flip things around, in a way.
Amazing. Shall we move on to Louis's question as well? So I've got, if you have remote reports, how do you properly build a relationship with them? If you have a mix, how do you build teamwork? Tell me the context behind this.
So, Corona, I guess. we were always at the office before Corona. After Corona, we, of course, worked remotely. And then after that, we had this hybrid of working. But there are some that are fully remote. And I know that some of my my managers, they have teams that are in that case also, you know, semi hybrid or almost fully remotely, and they have issues on the team spirit, and they have issues on building a good relationship with them. And the question comes, you know, how do I achieve a relationship with my report like I have with you? But for me, I work with these people every day in the office. And now after Corona, I at least work with them 2 days at the office, at least. So that's, and now even if when we were during Corona, it was fully remote, but we still had our history where we were together all days at the office. So that's where this comes from, because I think it is tricky on how do you build good relationship, or does it become more of a, like Mats was saying, like, only management. It's not really a relationship. It's like, okay, this is your job, this is my job, let's just get on with it. Like, how do you manage?
What are your thoughts, guys?
So I can answer that. I think at Tingert, we were remote from the start. We were a distributed team. It was before Corona, so our colleagues were in Poland, so we spoke like daily during, like, on Slack and Zoom and stuff like that. But I think it's really important to establish some kind of, like, personal connection, right? Don't talk about, you have to win people's trust in a way, right? So don't just, when you talk to them on the video call maybe or something on the phone, so, like, talk about other non-work related stuff, let's say, right? And find something that you both connect around. It can be games, or it can be something in common, and only then, in my opinion, you can win the trust of people in a good way.
Totally agree. So building relationships is the only way forward, more or less. So if you don't have any relationship, you don't respect each other, kind of in that way, to work for each other, to help each other, to lean on each other, etc. You will get more motivation. You will get more inspiration. Yes, by having that click, that thing in common. So when working in hybrid or remote, it's super key to have one-to-ones. And we even do that with consultants as well. So just making sure they have a connection, and then the work will be so much better. And also someone to, I mean, everyone, there's always this work-life balance that everyone is talking about, but you need someone to listen to you as well. So if you have a challenge privately as well, or at work, I mean, it still needs to be a balance, and you need someone to understand that. So if you're not doing your A game, If someone knows about that, then they will help you, they will support you. Perhaps the expectations will be lowered for that period. So you don't add even more stress. So that has been my kind of key thing throughout my career, is to build relationships. And funny that you said games, Ilya. So actually started up having a Friday gaming group going off to a gaming center back in the 2000s. And that really created a relationship. So these were the guys that helped me out whenever I was having challenges. So because you had this connection. You should always think about there is a person behind the role that loves something, likes something, or perhaps have a problem with something. Just show that you care and show that you're vulnerable as well. Something that is quite unswedish as well, which I can challenge as well, is that if someone is asking how you feel, be honest as well. Don't just say it's okay. If it's not okay, say that. Yeah. I mean, especially if you want to create a relationship, I think it's super key. So.
Yeah, 100%.
Exactly. Think of your mask. Take off your mask, right, for the people. Mm-hmm. That's the only way to show vulnerability. But I think also it's important that to see each other in real life, that you can beat that. And even when you do, maybe some people are working remotely, when you do, like, go out and have lunch together, informal things, right? Go out and have a fika, Swedish fika, something, and just, like, talk human to human instead of, like, manager to. So create that report, create that connection, as you say. Super important to try to win the trust.
Yeah, I think that's exactly that. I mean, I guess that I wouldn't say that people are having bad relationship with the fully remote, but they're just not as good as the one that you have with people you work with. I guess that's the issue. And I'm wondering if there is any kind of, like, have you have worked with fully remote people and still felt like, yeah, but we have great connection with this great teamwork. Because I do feel that, especially the teams that I have where they are very, very fully remote, they have challenges on this, mostly because when you are at the office, you know, after a meeting, you just start, you know, chatting, you know, random stuff comes up. You go get coffee, again, random stuff. You eat lunch, again, random stuff. So you're like, during a day, you will have at least 4 or 5 situations where you will have some random stuff. Fully remote, like, you have a daily, everyone talks a little bit, then like, okay, bye, click, and you won't see anyone else until the next daily. So that's the thing, like, how would, and it's not about the manager only having, but how will the team create a good culture without having like a hurdle open on Slack at all times? That becomes very nosy. Without having multiple meetings on the day to check in, because that also becomes kind of content switching. Because that's the thing, well, in you the can office, do, you content switch at the same time, but at home you will never content switch at the same time. So that's
You can do. I know you told me that you have this virtual coffees, right, with people. You have also virtual after works where people meet together. You can maybe have a virtual lunch, eat together, like those. If you're at home eating lunch, just join and see each other eat. What are you eating? Oh, that looks delicious, or something like that. Keep things informal and just hang out, like a water cooler moment. Those who show up, show up. And we have done stuff like that, and it's kind of like helped a bit to bring people closer together, to get to know each other. So, but it can never replace, I think, real life experience, unfortunately.
It is
super interesting. I always think about it. There are companies that are very successful, remote only companies who are successful, right? And that's great. But I'm thinking, like, how successful would they be if they were like in the office, right? You never know, but serendipity is one thing, as you're saying, Luis, just like those random spontaneous moments, meeting people in the hallway, passing by with the coffee, chatting about stuff. It doesn't exist in online.
I'm an advocate for pair programming and mentoring. So you always have someone that you create that extra relationship with, and then Also, I mean, you should mix it up. So you shouldn't always pair program with the same one. So you should can do work together as well. And then you will speak about the family or whatever, what you will do after work, etc. as well. So that can also create a better team spirit in a way, or spirit for the mission. So
that is
we
true.
Actually do something really similar here as well. Evolution, so obviously not to do with tech, because I'm not a programmer, but in a similar way. So we have our Swedish team, which I'm part of, but it's a smaller division within our Nordics division. Whereas we'll obviously work with managers and people within our close team, but we are actually buddied with someone else in the wider team just to kind of meet up once every week, once every 2 weeks. And it gives you, like you said, Matt, it gives you a chance to talk about anything except for work as well. And it's great. It's a great idea.
Yeah.
Perfect. And to finish with, I do have a question for all of you as well, which hopefully it'll help our listeners in their journey to leadership. So what key skills or mindset shifts do you believe are crucial for a successful evolution for a developer becoming a leader?
You have to be interested in people.
Yeah, I was going to, and don't do it for the money. I mean, really.
No.
No, I mean, because that's the 100% the wrong thing to base it on.
Yeah,
because you have to handle people, and as Ilya says, you know, it's about the tough decisions, it's about the soft decisions, it's about caring, it's about watching people grow, and it's about being very unselfish, because you want your reports to be the one that are getting the shining lights. You know, they want to be the ones that the company say, thank you for building this wonderful thing. You are not the one that's going to receive any of that. So if you are looking into being on the spotlight and you're looking for you know, that kind of thing, it's not really why you should do it. And why I say the money is because that will never make you do the fund. I mean, if someone says to me like, hey, can you be a grave digger? We will pay you more. It's like, yeah, I mean, I don't really like being a grave digger, so I really shouldn't do that. But they pay more, so maybe I should. No, definitely not. So do what you want to do. And if you enjoy engineering, stay within engineering. If you don't like your work with people, you have very short patience with people, and you don't see yourself as a leader, then don't take that step just because it's my next step in my career.
And it's nice to see, obviously, that people like Matt's. Yeah. Sorry, Ilya, carry on.
Computers are easy to work with because they're predictable. People are not. And everyone is like unique. And you have to accept that. And you kind of like lower your guard, right? So it's often like being a manager. It's like, it's most of the time, it's dirty, it's ungrateful. But when something works, you get like such a huge kick right out of it, like you feel so good about yourself that you're seeing someone else level up or like watching grow or like be finishing the team finish a big product. But as you say, you don't get a lot of credit for that oftentimes, in my opinion. The team does, or you say like, it wasn't me, it was the team did it. So you're like, you're an enabler as a manager. You're just there to remove the roadblocks for the team and for your colleague and stuff like that. It's not about you. It's about the people who are under you. So my opinion.
What are your thoughts?
I agree. Yeah, I mean, so there is something else to be a manager and leader work-wise, and then to kind of help your family with IT stuff and problems. If you have lower patience with family, that's something else. You shouldn't think about that, because I get so impatient with family of helping them with their IT problems. but something else with work, I would say, because then you're having individuals that you work with that are having an education or at least a lot of experience building stuff. They're really great people and knowing what they're doing. So for me, it's just a pleasure to be briefed by them, to be getting so much input, so much smart things. So for me, it's like I'm becoming smarter working with these people. So for me, it's just a blessing in a way. So you as a person and individual, you will be kind of be lifted in a way just by being a manager, if you're surrounding yourself with the people, the right people, and that are also ambassadors for what you do and the job or the company you work for. But you should never take a manager job if you are not want to get your hands dirty. So for me, it's obvious to fix also the small problems. So fix the administration, the bureaucracy, etc. Whatever problem they have. For me, I have no problems of getting into whatever system to fix whatever they need in order to get there, even if I could ask someone else to do it for me. So just to be available for whatever and to listen, to go deep in listening when the expression from the direct report is saying that I don't feel well or I need problem, just remove everything around you and just listen. That can be difficult to do in the beginning, but you will get there if you just train on it, I would say, and focus on it. But it takes time to be a good manager because you need to learn about yourself quite a lot. But potentially you can lead direct reports better than you can lead yourself in some way, but it will not be long-term good because you need to take care of yourself as well in the end. So you can't just have everyone on your shoulders. But mainly new managers normally get into that problem, take on everything. So you need to also find like, this is the line. I should not go across this line.
Yeah, extremely well said. Go ahead.
Okay, so I would say, like, follow up on that. I mean, you have to learn by doing. You can read all the books and study theory, but like, you have to get your hands dirty, as you say, and make the tough choices. And you will say stupid things, and you will make the wrong decisions, and you will screw up stuff. But that's the part of the process to learn. I think one good important tip for like new people is to find someone like a mentor, coach, or someone you can just like share things with, not some internally, maybe some internally somewhere too, right? So, but to get something, things off your chest, and maybe even get some help or some advice. That's super important to for your like mental health, I would say, and your own development. If someone has done it before you, they can provide you with tips like, here's what I've done, or here, have you thought about this? So it's crucial to find someone, I don't know, a teacher. Someone.
And what are you thinking, Levin?
Luis. Yeah, so I you say it so well, and I couldn't agree more. And it really got me thinking about when you're an engineer and you create a bug, a really really nasty bug, or you accidentally use a production service instead of a stage service, and you accidentally do weird stuff. Because that happens, and that's how we learn. And that's still kind of okay when you're an engineer. But when you're a manager, you really don't allow yourself to do those mistakes because you should be perfect. But that's the thing, like, we're still new in our skills, and we are learning to be managers. And some of us have been doing it for more time. And yeah, maybe we do less mistakes. We will always do mistakes, and especially in the beginning, just to admittedly allow yourself to do the screw ups, allow yourself to, like, oh, I shouldn't have done that, or that would listen to your gut feeling. Maybe you had a engineer that you really felt that this is not going to be a good fit, but we kind of need that person anyway, and that person kind of destroys the full team, and you're like, ah, damn, I should have listened to my gut. And that's the thing, like, this will happen, and that's okay, and you should be fine with the learning process, because it's exactly what it is. It's a learning process. It's a bug.
Amazing. Well, before we do end the podcast, I'd like to say thank you so much to all of you for sharing your thoughts on every question and subtopic. So just to recap, we've had Matt Johansson, who's Head of Engineering and Senior Director for IKEA Retail Web at Inca Group Digital. We've had Ilya Mikhailov, who's a fractional CTO and ex-Ingrid. And we've got Louis Rizzo, who's Senior Engineering Manager at Klarna. If you are hiring for any new technical roles or looking for a new role yourself, feel free to get in touch with us here at Evolution. Or if you or anyone you know would like to be featured on a future podcast, you can drop me a message too. I'm Georgia Benton and you can find me on LinkedIn or email me at georgia.benton@evolution-nordics.com or even visit us online at evolutionjobs.com/Nordics. Thank you so much again to all of our guests and thank you for listening. We hope you can join in next time.